Everybody got an education because they either love their content or they love kids or maybe both. Talking to parents, however, wasn't one of the equations we learned about in college, though. For whatever reason, the thought of contacting parents causes anxiety. Crystal Frommert joins us today to not only promote her new book, but to talk to us about the art of contacting parents. One of my favorite things we talked about today was the parent partnership bank. It's a great analogy, really. Every positive interaction is a deposit in the bank, and every negative interaction is a withdrawal from the bank. One reason parent calls cause so much anxiety is because most of us, myself included, are using credit cards to contact parents. Join us today to learn how to stay out of communication debt and start building that communication nest egg. Crystal Frommert has over 20 years of experience as an educator in public, parochial, and international schools. Beyond teaching middle and high school, she has served as an instructional coach, school board member, adjunct college instructor, technology coordinator, and administrator. She currently teaches middle school math in Houston, where she lives with her husband, daughter, and fluffy dog. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit, the podcast that brings you the change makers in education. Tune in to hear from educational leaders who aren't content with the status quo educational model and are blazing their own path.
Welcome, everybody, to The Peg Doesn't Fit. Today we got Crystal Frommert on the show. How are you today, Crystal?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Coming all the way to us from Houston, Texas. We're super excited to talk about this episode. You got a book coming out, When Calling Parents Isn't Your Calling. When's that coming out? So everybody kind of has an idea of how they can get a hold of that.
We're looking at probably early April that should be available on Amazon.
All right. Well, that's about a month away. So everybody needs to be looking for that. Listen, we gave you a little brief bio for you in our introduction of the show, but can you kind of take a minute to discuss your educational journey with us today, just so all of our listeners kind of know where you've been and where you are now?
Sure. So this is my 20-something year of teaching. I lost count a few years ago, and I've been teaching mostly middle school math in my career. I've had a short stint as an administrator in middle school. I've done some instructional coaching. I even had a short stint as an adjunct professor for the College of Education, University of Houston. That was a part-time gig, and they are very different from middle schoolers. It was a different kind of experience for me. And but I keep coming back to the middle school math classroom, no matter what little walkabouts I take. I keep coming back to what I consider home.
Yeah, I agree. I've always been in middle school myself. It just seems to me that middle school for me seems to be kind of that age group where you can make the biggest difference. So
I feel that way in math, especially because research has shown that, you know, around upper elementary, middle school age is when students start to get a disinterest or a disliking to math. And my mission as a math teacher is to make it fun, to show them the beauty of math, and maybe deter some of them from going down the path of not liking math anymore.
Well, I wish I'd have had you, because math was like my favorite subject K through five, and I got to middle school and I hated it. So
so he fit the research.
Listen, we're going to be talking about parent communication, and I know this isn't the case for all educators, but for many, the idea of talking to parents causes anxiety. Where does that come from?
You know, I think that comes from, because I've talked to so many colleagues over the last few decades of teaching, that probably 9 out of 10 phone calls, or maybe even more than that, have been fine, or parent interactions have been just fine. Very pleasant, supportive parents, great productive conversation. But then you've got that one out of 10 where the parent is having a really bad day, or they're just a grumpy person in general, or they want to defend their child no matter what, and it's a bad experience. And I remember distinctly talking to a fantastic math colleague of mine who said, after this one parent phone call over the parent jumped down my throat, I'm never going to call a parent again. And that one call ruined it for her. And that's too bad, because you can get so much out of parent phone calls and interactions face to face. But I think it's going to be that 10% that's going to ruin it and make you a little bit nervous for the next call.
Yeah, that's kind of the way the world works. I mean, when you watch the news, it's like all you see. I mean, if you never left your house and all you did was live off of the news, you would think that the world was falling apart. When in reality, there's probably way more positive stuff that happens in the world, but that negative stuff just really
is what drives us. And
exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So in your book, I think this was in the first chapter, there's a couple of phrases, ideas that you talked about. You talked about Happy Notes and a parent partnership bank. Can you talk a minute about those two loaded ideas?
Sure. So this entire book idea started with an Edutopia article that I wrote almost 3 years ago. And that led me to meeting Darren Peppard with Road to Awesome and then writing the book. But in that initial article that I wrote for Edutopia, I talked about, and it came from the pandemic. That was the very, very beginnings of the pandemic when I wrote this, about I was feeling this distance from the families. I was feeling this distance from my students because we were completely remote in the spring of 2020. And reaching out to them became more and more important to me as an educator. And the Happy Notes idea, it was not new at the pandemic time, but it was more important to me, I guess, then. Because of the isolation that we were feeling at the time, it was so important that I reached out to tell parents, you know, your kid's doing a really great job, or I really love the questions that she asked in our Zoom class the other day. And before the pandemic, I would send out just, especially on a Friday afternoon, when I was feeling a little bit like tired and just done with the week, I wanted to get this is selfish of me to say, but I wanted to get a little bit of a boost in my own mood. I would send out Happy Notes to families by email and say, Eric had a great week. I really love the questions he was asking. He was really engaged. In fact, he was one of the few kids who got the challenge problem correct today. So great job. So that when Eric goes home for the weekend, the parents can say, hey, we got a note from your teacher and great job. And that builds, that leads into the idea of the bank. And I know this sounds transactional and I don't mean for it to sound that way, but with relationships, you do have to make positive deposits and be more of a giver in a relationship than a taker, just like your bank account, hopefully, is the same positive balance. That I want to give students more compliments, more praise, more encouragement than I do when I have to email Eric's parents and say, or call Eric's parents and say, he threw an eraser across the room, which he might do, right? So there will be times I have to take that deposit and say something negative, but I want to make sure that my balance is quite positive.
You know, and that I talk to my teachers about that all the time, because if all they ever hear is negative, you know, that's when they stop answering the phone, because we're like, I don't want to hear this again, you know. But if every now and then they get a positive call, when you have to make those negative calls, they're so much more supportive, because you've kind of developed that partnership with them. And they know that you're not just out to get their kid, because you know what's best for them, because you tell us what they're doing right too. So I think, right. I think that's a great concept, a great way to use that in terms of a bank. Okay, so positive notes home is great. Do you have any other kind of tips to help fill this bank up?
Well, one of the very first note that you ever make home, and I did not get this idea from myself. In fact, most of my book is nuggets that I have taken from colleagues, administrators, wonderful people I've had the privilege to work with. And I've collected these pieces of information that have helped me become a successful teacher and have successful relationships with parents. But this particular nugget I got from a young principal that I worked with probably 20 years ago. And he told his very large staff of a very large public junior high, your very first contact with parents must be positive. So I took that to heart. And especially if there's going to be a kid I have a sense will probably throw that eraser the first week of school or whatever he or she's going to do, right?
Yeah, they're easy to find.
Right. You can sniff them out a little bit. So I send a personalized note to every single family. It takes a very long time, and it's not a, you know, it's not something that's easy to do the first week of school when teachers are already very, very busy. But usually on the second, third day of school, I'll sit down, do a batch of emails and do a couple more the next day, and it'll be personalized. It'll say, you know, Dr. and Mr. Smith, I'm so pleased to have Layla in my class. I'm looking forward to a great year in algebra. I can already tell she, you know, has a love for working with integers. You can find anything, right? In the first couple of days of school, you can find something that Layla stands out, or any kid, right? And then Layla's parents feel like, oh, well, this teacher is optimistic. This teacher sees my child. This teacher sees something positive within a couple of days from my child, which of course is something positive with every child. And then when you need to reach out to Layla's family later, then you've already established, I see her and I know who she is in my class. That I think is one of the best ways to start off the year on a good foot.
Text, phone, email, or letter. They're all great. They're all great means of communication, but they're all just a little bit different. Do you have a preference? And is there one that is better than others at certain times?
I think it depends on the situation. It's difficult to discern that sometimes in the moment, but it's important to think about, do you want to deliver bad news or sensitive information through email? Probably not. So that would be a face-to-face or a phone call. If it's something that's very minor, very short, because you want to keep your emails very short, very minor, answering a quick question, that kind of thing, I think email is very appropriate. I also think email is quite appropriate, and I put this in the book as well, for initiating the phone call, because a cold call is really uncomfortable. In my generation, we talked on the phone a lot when we were kids, but I know that the generation that's just below mine, when the phone rings, it's kind of nerve-wracking. They don't like it when the phone rings. At least that's what my teenage daughter tells me. Like, who talks on the phone, Mom? So, you know, sending an email first to soften the cold call and say, you know, hello, Dr. Smith, I would love to talk with you this afternoon about, and then mention briefly what it's about James's progress in algebra, or, you know, something like that. Would it be a good time for me to call between 3 and 4? What number is best for me to call? Then you're setting that up so that Dr. Smith can get, you know, her spouse involved if she wants, or whatever it is. You're setting up, like, who do I need to talk to? You're prepping the parents on, this is what we're going to talk about. One of the most anxiety-producing emails anyone could ever send, especially school administrators, is when they send an email saying, can you meet? I hate it so much. It is so anxiety-producing. So I would never do that to a parent.
Especially on a Friday.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Don't do that. Don't do that. So I would never do it to a parent. I wouldn't say, can I call you at 3 o'clock today? Because that parent is wondering what in the world is going on. So give a little hint of what you want to talk about, of course. And then have the phone call about, you know, their progress. That I think that's an appropriate way to use email. One not appropriate way to use email is to write like a novel to a parent. Yeah. Sometimes when we're angry and we're heated, we will write multi-paragraph emails, which are almost never effective. So that's when I would say, look at the situation. How sensitive is it? How much of a bad news is it? Is it short little note about positivity, then you can decide what's the best mode of communication.
Yeah, but to counter that, I mean, I guess some parents do prefer email. And so I've had, you know, if you build that relationship up and they're like, yeah, email's perfectly fine, then sending those paragraphs is a lot better than having that say your first introduction. Hey, my name is Mr. Steven, and you know, but get once that relationship established, then that would be okay. If the parent is okay with that, correct?
Right. Once you get to know them and you know their mode of communication. In fact, I don't put this too much into my book because I think it's because of my generation that texting is a pretty common way, I think, with some parents and maybe some teachers. I don't know how that works with using your personal phone and using apps. There's like the Remind app. But I think there are probably many teachers out there who are comfortable with texting back and forth. And that's probably something I need to get more used to.
Yeah, I tell my teachers if they don't want their parents to know their personal cell phone, there's lots of different apps that will assign you a free phone number. Mm-hmm. So you can download an app that'll give you a free phone number to text to. Also, another thing that I use text for, if I'm trying to get a hold of a parent, I might text them and say, hey, this is Eric Steven out at X school. Could you give me a call for a minute? I just need to talk to you about something real quick. It's not an emergency. Just want to talk to you about something. And usually they call me back, and it's a good way of communication. So
Right.
All right.
It's pretty comfortable for people.
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of the way the world works these days. I am certain we got a listener or two out there who's had a really uncomfortable conversation with a parent. You alluded to that a little bit earlier in the interview. There are a variety of ways to describe that uncomfortable conversation. A lot of times parents are like, my child would never do that. You know, you got your parent that no matter what you say, they will not believe you. And then you've got other teacher or other parents that become attacking and they almost even bullying, trying to get their way. Do you have any advice on maybe how you handle that when you're in the middle of that? And then maybe how you can avoid that in the first place?
Yeah, establishing that relationship is going to help you avoid some of those issues, but not all of them, right? I mean, you can try your best to establish a good relationship. You're still going to maybe encounter someone on a really bad day, or maybe they're just a grump and there's nothing you could do about it. I even wrote in the book that sometimes when a parent is chewing you out or yelling or doing something completely inappropriate, it probably has nothing to do with you. It has a lot to do with what's going on with them personally.
Yeah.
So a couple of ways that you have to gauge the situation. If it's becoming absolutely out of control and abusive, then you have a right to leave that situation, to say, let's end this meeting now. Let's calm down. Let's, you know, look at the data or do some more research on this, and let's reconvene, you know, at a certain time. And then when you reconvene, you certainly want an administrator with you. Those are very rare and very extreme situations. But I would say if a parent is just in complete disbelief of, that's not how Susie behaves at home, and I just cannot envision this, I find humor to be really helpful, to lighten it a little bit and be like, hey, I totally get it. I've taught many kids who are very similar to Susie. She is a very normal seventh grader. But here's what's going on in the classroom, and, giving other stories about what's going on without names. Right. And just lightening it and saying, Susie's doing all right, but let's just talk about some ways that she could do better. That sometimes lightens it a little bit. I do have the sometimes it's an advantage to be a parent and an educator. Not always, of course, but sometimes I can say, hey, my kid also struggled in this particular class, a Spanish class, so I get how that feels. So relating to them in some way, and keeping it light. So it just depends, and don't take it personal. It's very hard not to take it personal because our job is very personal. Mm-hmm. I had one parent who, this was years ago, was a face-to-face conference, and I was a very organized teacher, and I had all of my printouts printed and all of my data and all the things. And he sits down with me and he says, well, how is my daughter doing? And I glance at my stack of paper and he says, don't look at your paper. Just tell me. Mm. And I was like, well, excuse me, sir.
Right.
I paused, I took a deep breath, and I said, I would like to inform you of how your daughter's doing, but I need a bit of a reminder of her progress from last term. So give me just a few seconds. And by me standing up to him in that polite way, I think disarmed him a little bit, like, oh, okay, I'm not going to be able to push this teacher around, because he kind of walked around with this bullying kind of persona. Mm-hmm. So knowing your rights, knowing your boundaries as a teacher is really important.
Yeah. And I like what you said about you, it's okay to leave that conversation. And I just wanted to take a quick PSA for administrators listening. It's nice when a teacher has permission to do that. Because some teachers feel that would be rude, or that it's not okay to just, because there are times when you just got to say, listen, I really want to have a productive conversation, but if you keep attacking me, I'm going to hang up. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to have permission to be able to do that, because the idea of hanging up on somebody just seems rude.
Right.
I mean, you don't want to be the rude teacher that hangs up on a parent, but at the same time, you don't want to be the pushover teacher that it's okay to be cussed at and yelled at and attacked by a parent either.
Absolutely not. Yeah. And I love that, because administrators do need to make that very explicit to their faculty early on. Like, we support you. And if you feel like the language is becoming abusive, you do not have to put up with it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of getting permission, you talked about a little bit in your book that I'd never even thought about. I mean, your whole book, I'm sitting there nodding my head. I'm like, yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I agree with that. And then you start talking about training teachers how to contact parents. that's not only not talked about in like college in your teacher prep courses, but even at least in my buildings that I've been at, I mean, it's not really a part of building professional development for that matter. So when I read that, I was more of a, why haven't I ever thought about that before? I'd like to hear your take on the possibility of, I mean, what are some solutions? I know that we're not like college professor, like curriculum designers in college. So our influence is a little limited there. Mm-hmm. But in terms of having professional development for teachers on parent communication, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's important to start during undergrad when you're training to become a teacher, or in graduate school if you're in some teacher training program. If you're doing the traditional route of the student teaching, I think it would be amazing if student teachers could sit in on more parent conferences and even contribute to parent conferences. I remember back in the late 90s when I was a student teacher, I do remember sitting in on some parent conferences, and but I never said a word. And I really didn't get to sit in on the ones that were kind of salty and spicy type conferences. You know, they had me in for the nice, easy ones. And if you welcome your student teachers into those experiences and encourage them to speak up, because they too know the students and they have something to contribute, or have them give a little spiel at parent night or curriculum night, some kind of contribution to a parent facing event would be very helpful in that. I think my book would be an excellent PD for school. I have to put that plug in there. That would be great PD, a book study for a school or a college program to read, to talk about the practical, efficient ways to communicate with families. And then, you know, at my school, I teach at a school where we have traditional report cards, but we also have narrative comments that are required 3 times a year. And they are required to be personalized to the student. No boilerplate, you know, canned responses for that. And I've been at this school for quite a long time, and I think maybe one out of all those years I've been there, there's been one training on how to actually write these comments, which really should be every year, right? Because we have new faculty coming in. So we should have a session or something every year on how do you write these comments? What makes a good comment for a student? Who are you writing to the student, to the parent? There's so much to consider there with writing a good narrative. A good friend of mine worked at an all-girls school in Cleveland, Ohio, and she had to write a page for every one of her advisees, summarizing every grade term. She had to write this page
summarizing for every student,
for all of her advisees. So she maybe had 15 advisees, and she had to write a page narrative summarizing that girl's term performance, right? So kind of collating all the information from all the teachers and then summarizing it in one page. So every school is different on what they expect with report card comments or reporting back to parents' progress. So some kind of training that's ongoing would be very helpful within schools. It's role play. I think when I was an instructional coach, I actually played the part of a bitter, angry mom in a role play situation to help a reluctant teacher kind of get ready for meeting with some parents who were questioning his pedagogy and his decisions he was making in his classroom. And so I'm not a great actress or anything, but I played the part of that mom of like, well, then tell me why this, just to keep throwing things at him, these curveballs to get him to get that practice.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. Thank you for that. What about the teacher? You know, because not all teachers are quite as prepared to have class newsletters, but there are some that have the newsletters. And then we all, I think at this point, every district has an online grade book. Mm-hmm. What about for those teachers that say, you know, I don't really need to call parents because I send home a newsletter every month or every week, or my online grade book? I'll give you an example. Like in my district, I mean, technically it's against district policy to fail a student if you have never made a parent contact prior to issuing that failing grade on a report card. yet many teachers will say, I've got an online grade book. They have access to that. Why is a newsletter and a grade book, why is that not sufficient?
First of all, I completely get where those teachers are coming from, right? Like, because I worked at a school that, I mean, the school where I've been at for a long time, we did not have live grades at first, and then we switched to live grades. So I saw that actual shift happening, and I heard so many teachers change their rhetoric to, well, why do I need to reach out? They can see that there's zeros in the grade book, or they can see that they made a 50 on this test, but really they're not, right? It's not the same. And it's difficult to explain that sometimes when a parent, or I'm sorry, when a teacher thinks, well, these parents are checking this all the time. Actually, they're not. They're not checking the online gradebook all the time. And right. And back then, it wouldn't email you an update. It wouldn't text you an update kind of thing. So you had to actually go in and log in and see this information. And parents, you know, newsflash, parents have jobs and they have busy lives and they have things going on just like we all do. And they're not just, most, I would say most, are not just hovering over your gradebook watching for the next update. And it takes that personal touch as well. When a zero pops up for missing homework, you know, if there's a way to put in a comment in there or a way to send an email to follow up and say, you know, I'm just wondering why, you know, why didn't Sarah have her work? Just want to let you know it wasn't in. I talked to her about it. Some sort of softening and humanity around that number is very important because we're not talking about robots who just get number outputs. We're talking about human beings, and it takes a personal touch to go with that. And it's not just numbers on a screen.
Right. Right. Well, listen, Ms. Frommert, we've talked about a lot of really powerful things here that I am hopeful that our listeners will gain some valuable insight about parent communication. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that that you want to share and kind of throw out there that I didn't pick up in my series of questioning?
One thing I didn't answer that you asked, I apologize for that, is you asked about the newsletter, and I didn't mention that, but there's a really great, another podcast called Cult of Pedagogy.
Oh yeah.
She has an episode on, why aren't parents reading my newsletter? I forget the exact title, but it's something like that.
Sure.
And I have to say, I'm a parent. I've been a parent for 15 years. And I'm a pretty attentive parent, you know, but I don't read my kids' school newsletters. I'm sorry to admit, I just don't. they're long, or they have, you know, too much clip art on them, or something's going on. And because I noticed when she started middle school, maybe I would glance at the newsletter, the class newsletter, and say, oh, you're studying, you know, gas and solids and liquids in science class. And I would turn to my middle schooler and she'd say, I guess. And so it's like, okay. So I didn't really get a lot out of reading the newsletter as far as engagement with my middle school daughter. What I do love, and I learned this from someone else, like most things I know, I learned that if you put at the end of the newsletter, here are the questions to ask your child. I think that is so helpful in generating that conversation at home, you know, that car ride home. If the parent happened to read the newsletter and, you know, the teacher said, ask your child this, 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 you know, in the car ride home, if you get a chance, not required, but if you get a chance, or at the dinner table, ask this. I try to do that with, from the child to the parent as well. So in my math class, I'll say, hey, tonight, I want you to ask your parents this riddle, ask them at the dinner table, right? And not every family is sitting down at the dinner table, but at some point I want the kid to interact with the parent on some sort of academic conversation. And we can do that too, from parent to child, with our newsletter.
That's a great advice to put those questionings at the end. And just as an example of newsletter attentiveness, my administrator gives us a newsletter every Sunday night, and I'm not going to lie, I don't read it. So if I don't read the newsletter for my boss, you know, that talks about my job, I think there's a parent or two out there that might not read our newsletter about our students, no matter what kind. Trust me, his newsletters are really pretty. They got lots of pictures. They're awesome. So I hope he's not listening to this, but
right. We'll keep that between us.
All right, Crystal. So We know we can get your book in early April. Is there any other way that our listeners, if they want to follow you and kind of get some more tidbits about you, how can they follow you, get in touch with you, and all that good stuff?
Yeah, I think the best way to find me would be on Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter with the EduTwitter, EduChat hashtags. And my last name is Frommert. And there's not that many Frommerts on Twitter. So if you search up Frommert, you're going to find me and maybe a couple people I'm related to, but that's about it. So you can find me. It's my tag is Mrs. Frommert. But you can find me on there, and I'll put information about when the book is coming out, where to find it. And then also in my profile, there's a link to my website as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. It was our pleasure to meet with you. And I know that we all have busy schedules, so the fact that you took a couple minutes out of your busy schedule to come talk to us, we are eternally grateful, and thank you.
It was my pleasure. It was really fun.
As always, thank you for checking us out at The Peg Doesn't Fit. We appreciate you listening. You can find us on Twitter at The Peg Doesn't Fit. You can find me at Ryan D. Bartle 1.
And my personal Twitter is at Eric J. Steven. You can also email us at thepegdoesntfit@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/thepegdoesntfit.
Drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Tell your educator friends or family, anybody. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on The Peg Doesn't Fit.